Welcome to the latest episode of Over the Counter in our special series of pharmacist interviews. Observed each year in October, American Pharmacist Month celebrates the incredible care pharmacists of all practice types deliver to patients on a daily basis. Throughout October, Drug Topics sat down with pharmacists of all backgrounds to learn what keeps them motivated in their profession. From the retail and community pharmacy space to specialty care, find out how exactly the profession is thriving today from a collection of pharmacists' unique perspectives.
What initially drew you to the pharmacy profession, and how has your career path unfolded?
Yeah, so what initially drew me, you know, I was just reflecting on this when I got the questions, and basically, I was not totally sure what I wanted to do before college at all. I remember when I got into college, my parents sat me down, they're like, what do you want to do? And I was like, I have no idea, which I think is common, but basically, they said, well, what do you like? And I identified that I really liked science and I am a people person. I'm very extroverted and like working with people. And I didn't want a job where I would be like sitting in an office alone. I wanted to interact with others. And I knew that like having a sense of purpose and not being bored and mentally challenged was going to be important to me. And so when I was discussing that with my parents, they were like, well, it sounds like, you know, healthcare would be a good option. And that's kind of when we started talking about the different possible pathways. And I knew I was really driven, like the duration of school wasn't going to be an issue for me. But interestingly, you know, there was this anecdote back when I was at that age of like going to college, there was this anecdote that pharmacy is a good career for women. And meaning you could work part-time, have a good work-life balance, financially secure. However, I kind of knew deep down that wasn't like enough for me, like that wasn't convincing enough. But I think what sold me when I was at least prompted to think about pharmacy more than medicine or nursing was I had interestingly had a lot of interactions with my local HEB pharmacist. So I grew up in Austin, Texas. And I had interacted with my pharmacist a lot because I was a very anxious kid. And I think that's what drew me to psychiatry. If I'm being completely honest, I suffered with anxiety growing up and even to this day. But basically, I was one of those people who I was terrified to take any medication. I was the kind of person who wanted lots of reassurance, had lots of questions, and even things as simple as birth control. Like I remember I was too embarrassed to ask with like people in the waiting room, but my pharmacist was really nice. She would like step outside with me and talk to me and answer my questions. And so I thought it was the coolest thing that I could go see them for free while my mom's like grocery shopping. And so what really sold it to me was I want to be this like accessible person who answers these like really important questions about their people's health, you know, and I don't necessarily have to go wait 45 minutes in a waiting room and be rushed in my appointment. Like it's ironic because the pharmacy field is really busy now that I know more about it. But from my perspective at that time, I thought it was really cool that I could go ask those questions and how accessible the pharmacist was.
Great. And how has your career unfolded? Where'd you start from and how has it, how have you gotten?
Yeah. I'm glad you're asking that. I didn't actually even reflect on this, but I can say it changed a lot. So, you know, I got into pharmacy school, very excited, and I totally thought I was going to go to that retail route because of, you know, those experiences from that HEB pharmacist that sold me. I just didn't know about the other career options at the time. And so when I started pharmacy school, I was working as a pharmacy technician at what was Randall's Pharmacy, was a grocery store as well. And I really liked it. I enjoyed interacting with people and I liked the fast-paced environment. But then I started going to organizations. I started like hearing from speakers in different areas like hospital and people with independent practices, clinical specialists. And I got excited about basically everything. I got confused. And I thought, you know, what sounded like the two big branches back then was just kind of hospital and retail. And so I was like, well, I have experience with retail. I think I should probably find a way to get hospital experience and see if I like it more. And so I, you know, it was hard to find a job back then. I literally would just show up places and ask if they were hiring. And I did that at It was St. David's North Austin Medical Center in Austin. And I literally just rang the doorbell to the pharmacy, had a good conversation with the manager there. And they were really awesome and worked with me, even though I was a student. They created a nice, flexible, as-needed schedule. And so I worked as a hospital technician for the next 3 years, like my P2 through P4 year. And I loved it. I thought it was, and I thought it fit so well in terms of I was learning therapeutics and stuff in class at the time, and there was something about delivering all the medicines in the hospital. I learned so much more about the medicines than I was in the retail environment that was so fast-paced. And I thought that, you know, I got to interact with a lot of different healthcare professionals, and I learned that that was really important to me. Like, I liked meeting the nurses, physicians, and seeing how the pharmacists interacted with those people. And I liked, you know, the idea of working in an ICU. Like, there was just so many options. So I kind of steered more towards hospital. But then my third year, that's when I started shadowing some specialist pharmacists. And the two I worked closely with was a psychiatric pharmacist at Austin State Hospital. Her name's Lisa Mikan. And the other one was a pharmacist at, blanking right now, Scott and White. Yeah, Scott and White in Temple, Texas. And I think Dr. Emery Martin, I believe. And anyway, they were amazing. They gave me lots of volunteer opportunities, shadowing opportunities. And I was like, wow, okay, this is where like I felt like I would be mentally stimulated. I was actually like excited to come home and share the interesting cases and stuff I saw with my partner. And I was like, wow, I'm not even like dreading going in. I just like loved going to see all the interesting things that would come up when I was shadowing those specialists. And so I kind of knew at that point I wanted to do residency. So it wasn't even until like my third year that I was like, I need to do a residency. I was totally set on community, then just hospital specialty came later. So then I did my residency and I loved everything. It was really hard. I feel like I went through a midlife crisis, like first year when you have to decide what specialty you want to commit to. I just the one thing I knew is I loved acute care. I liked fast pace. I liked challenging like consult type work. So I was between infectious diseases, critical care, and psych, and they're all very different. And I remember like I had some mentors who were like, "How are you gonna explain psych versus critical care? One of them you're like not talking to patients, and one of them you're talking to them a lot." And I was like, well, it's just the challenge nature and the cases and the learning aspect that I enjoyed, which is what brought me to academia later. But basically, I just went with my gut. I knew the most important thing by then for me in my job was just how much I would enjoy it. Like, will it make the time go by fast? I remember as a tech, I would look at the clock constantly, like, oh my gosh, how has it only been 1 hour? I'm ready to go home. I was like, I want a job where I don't feel like that, and I'm just in it, and I'm not bored. And so I went with what I thought was most fun. And psych, hands down, it was like I had done it as a student. I did it again as a PGY1 resident. And so luckily, that one was right before mid-year and the time to like decide early commitment. And I was like, man, there's just nothing more fascinating and interesting. I loved listening to the patients and learning from them. I was like, I could see that myself doing this long term. Like I liked the other environments, but I didn't like reading and learning about them as much as I liked psychiatry. And I had a lot of personal ties, you know, to the field as well. So that's how it all unfolded, you know. And so I guess I tell my mentees a lot now in pharmacy school, like you don't need to know what you want to do now. The key thing is getting involved and meeting people so you get exposure to as much as possible, so you at least feel like you were informed when it was time to make a decision.
Awesome. And can you talk about some of the rewards and challenges you face in your practice setting?
Yeah. So rewards, I kind of hinted at it, but so psychiatry. I always tell students there's never a boring day. It's super, super interesting. So the most rewarding part is truly learning from the patients. I'm very fortunate that in my practice, I get to see, like, I'm in a hospital setting at San Antonio State Hospital. But what's really neat about it is, you know, me and this big interprofessional team, like a doctorate psychologist, social worker, nurse, attending psychiatrist, even the staffing technicians, we all sit and bring the patient to the conference room. They know who we all are. They know what to expect. And I see patients every day with them. And I just really enjoy listening to them. I think you have to have a lot of empathy and compassion, kind of be like an empath, if you will. And I just think there's something to learn from every person, even if they have the same diagnosis, learning their lived experience, like the traumas they've experienced, the challenges they go through. It makes you a better healthcare professional to listen to their stories and appreciate them. So there's just so much. I think if you're not seeing patients directly, that it's hard to, be how to like make recommendations about how to optimize a person's medication without knowing them as a person, their psychological beliefs, their culture, everything about them helps inform you how to make better recommendations. So that's the most rewarding part, is just listening to them and learning from them. The challenges, though, it's very specific to psychiatry, I'll say. I think the challenges for pharmacy is like a different topic, but in psych, unfortunately, a lot of our medicines do not work very well. Like they have very, we call them modest effect sizes. And on top of that, they have terrible, terrible side effects. And so one of the biggest struggles in psych is getting patients to stay adherent on their medicines. But for me, again, the empathy part, I really understand there's like so many reasons why you wouldn't want to take those medicines because of the side effects, the stigma. But on top of that, these patients, they don't oftentimes, like I work with often patients with schizophrenia and bipolar disorder, so more severe mental illnesses. But oftentimes in those more severe states, patients don't actually have an understanding of their mental illness or believe it's going on. And so that's one big barrier to wanting to take your medicine. Number two, they often have a co-occurring substance use disorder. And we have very, very limited treatment options for substance use disorders. Like some of them, we don't have any, like methamphetamine use disorder, cocaine use disorder. We have patients on my unit who they're sneaking contraband onto the unit. We find that they snuck a methadone pill from a staff, like crazy things happening, and very limited ways on how to help treat the co-occurring substance use disorder. And so on top of that is the side effects. And then some patients, there's just so treatment refractory and severe. We've tried everything. We've exhausted every option and they're still not getting better. And what happens in that situation is rampant polypharmacy. So I think that's what hurts my soul most as a psych pharmacist, is just seeing some really awful med regimens sometimes. But I know after working with the physicians that it's not that the physicians are doing something wrong or they're not educated. It's more like they don't know, there's nothing else to do. And so they really care about the patient. They're adding and adding and adding. But then that's why I think pharmacists are valuable. I come in and my perspective is, I don't think that this is actually like, I now think the risks are outweighing the potential benefits. And so, because psych, a lot of it is subjective of like what you should do when someone's treatment refractory, I think it's really important to have multiple perspectives in terms of ethics and caring about the patient and their safety. So that was a really long answer, but it's a challenging population to work with.
I bet. No problem. Can you share something unique about your practice setting, patient population, or a specific program you've implemented that exemplifies the value of pharmacists in patient care?
Yeah, so something unique about mine that's like very, very unique. I have to tell students who are interested in psych, mine is like a very unique niche. Like there's lots of other psych settings. So at San Antonio State Hospital, most of our patients are forensic, and forensic means that they have been charged with a crime. And it's usually sick, been deemed that there's a severe mental illness that has made them unable to actually, stand trial. To actually like go through the court hearing process. So a lot of our patients are at the hospital because they've been charged with a crime, but their mental illness is so severe, they literally can't understand their charges to, have their right to stand trial and go through that process. The patients I work with actually are termed NGRI, and that is not guilty by reason of insanity. It's not the best wording. But these are patients where they did eventually go through the court process, but then there was enough evidence that they were just so severely ill, and that's what caused them to commit the crime. So I say this is a unique population because they're very vulnerable and misunderstood. People hear their charge, and their charge follows them for their life, you know, in terms of opportunity and integrating back into the community. And so it kind of unfortunately traumatizes and defines them. There's a lot of shame around it, and I think it makes it harder for them to ever reintegrate and continue to get the care they need because of the charges that they face. So some other unique challenges is there's so many patients with severe mental illnesses in jails. There's more there's more than hospitals can accept from the jails right now. And so there's a dire shortage of mental health providers to care for forensic patients who need care. So they just aren't getting the care that they need. And consequently, civil patients, which are patients who are not charged with a crime, they're just patients who really need mental health care. They can't get access to hospitals when they're in crisis, because all our beds are being taken up by forensic patients, which is a state priority for state funding reasons. And so patients without mental health charges who are also severely mentally ill are not getting care. And basically, you know, the wording on some advocacy sites are they're waiting to get charged with a crime. They're waiting till things are so bad that they become a danger that's identified in the public to then get in jail to then come to the hospital. And that's just ridiculous. Like, that shouldn't happen. But like all this, you know, if you wrap it around, like, what's the stemming issue is access to care. Like, patients with mental illness don't have access to care. And that's not even just severe mental illness, that's just every person with mental illness. And so, you know, there's a huge movement in psych pharmacy right now. We're trying to implement what's called psychotropic stewardship programs. The goal is that if we create this standard idea similar to infectious diseases stewardship programs, that every place that treats mental illness should have a psychiatric pharmacist to oversee care, to optimize treatment and improve safety, that that becomes expected, that we grow this workforce, and that will also help improve access to care. You know, psych pharmacists in general were very underutilized. We could do so much more. Obviously, it's reimbursement issues that kind of makes it hard to justify implementing one. And so that's why the stewardship programs are one strategy we're trying to use to kind of not mandate, but get psych pharmacists into more treatment settings and bridge the care gap. So I didn't even mention there's a shortage, you know, of psychiatrists, like a huge shortage of mental health providers, in addition to the all other problems that I mentioned. So I'm hoping, I've only been at my practice site a year. I was somewhere else before that, but I'm really hoping that we can start a psychotropic stewardship program and try to optimize my services as much as possible for our state hospital.
That's so interesting. You're like at the intersection of psychology, psychiatry, pharmacology, forensics. That's such an interesting job.
Oh yeah, it's so interesting. I love talking about it, obviously. It's
Right.
very cool.
What was the next question? In your opinion, what are the biggest opportunities for pharmacists to expand their role in patient care in today's healthcare landscape?
I think like the what I don't know what word to use, like the hot area, like the area of huge growth right now and opportunity. And this isn't just psych, just pharmacists in general, it's primary care. So I will say that I love my practice setting. It's unique. It's cool. Sometimes I have this guilt that I could be doing so much more in the primary care space. Like a huge area even in psych is called, I think it's primary care mental health integration. The VA has kind of spearheaded a lot of that. And so basically trying to integrate mental health care into primary care settings where, you know, it's such a common issue that's brought up, but there's not enough time from primary care providers to address mental health adequately, as well as substance use disorders. So I think there's just such an opportunity to integrate pharmacists into primary care settings or ambulatory care settings in general, because the shortage of care isn't just psych, it's just global at this point, and we are a very underutilized resource to bridge, like, in between appointments with the physician. We can be the med management appointment go-to for patients.
Great. And the last question, I looked up some of your research. So this is kind of more specific to your practice. What harm reduction strategies can pharmacists implement to help patients with substance use disorders?
Yeah, I'm glad you brought that up. You were looking at my research because I feel like I think, I'm not working in community, but overall, I would say my passion is just improving access to care and kind of identifying like where are the biggest needs, like what more do we need to be doing? And something I alluded to earlier is a lot of my patients have co-occurring substance use disorders, and I think it's the hardest thing to treat, and it's such an area of need right now. That's why I'm passionate about it. So in terms of harm reduction strategies, I think the biggest thing is knowing your resources. And even me, I just moved to San Antonio a year ago. I'm still learning them. But basically asking, like if you are working in a setting with social workers, physicians, like people who've been around longer, asking like if you I want to refer a patient for like a safe like syringe service exchange program, like where do they go? Just learning about where patients can be referred for, PrEP or, drug like screening, like getting that done safely, like learning about your resources. So here, for example, we actually have a biweekly, it's like a, we call it a SUD6. So basically all providers in the UTESCA or the UT Health Science Center, San Antonio region, who care for patients with substance use disorders, they can join this meeting biweekly and they can ask other people treating the disorders questions about like, what do you do for your patient if this kind of thing comes up? So I guess the bottom line is just knowing you're not supposed to know everything. It's about learning to ask those questions, like, what should I do for this patient? And I've had to do that a number of times. Like, just what do we do in this situation? Like an example I can give right now is we have a patient and he's been in the hospital, but he has severe substance use disorder. And he's the one I alluded to earlier who was sneaking, we found he got a methadone pill from a staff member, and that was alarming. And I was like, well, how at what point do we start considering meds for opioid use disorder here in the state hospital setting? And it was this huge controversial thing because they're supposed to be abstinent in the hospital, but they're not. They are sneaking meds, they're sneaking drugs onto the unit. And I think that that's a really good example of there's going to be things that come up that you don't know how to address, but you have to be an advocate for your patients and just ask the big questions like, well, should we be considering treatment for this patient and how should we go about it? What's the safest way to start treatment? And it's hard because there's a lot of stigma with substance use disorders, but yeah, just asking questions.
Great, doctor. Well, that was all I had for you. I just want to say again, thank you for taking the time out of your day to talk to me about this. It was great. It was an awesome conversation.
Thank you, and no, I'm happy to. It's fun.
Thank you very much. Have a good day.
You too. Bye.